Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT.
Well, Tyler, I'm rewriting my intro notes right now based on that ending. We got some news to talk about. I thought the main event, the six man tag, was a really good way to kind of cap off the show, and I think it was a main event that the show as a whole really needed due to some other things that that took place on it. The Good Brothers get the win for their team. Great match. But the big news we see at the end, Kenta appears, attacks Jon Moxley, hits the go to sleep as the show goes off the air. I'll just leave it really open-ended for you, man. What did you think of that? I mean, were you expecting it, given what has happened throughout the last week between those two? We'll take this down a multitude of paths, but what did you just think of the actual angle itself?
Yeah, I was quite literally shocked to see Kenta on TNT on this Wednesday night. I think all of us as wrestling fans have had kind of the fever dream of, oh, some sort of super show that has, you know, all these companies that aren't WWE teaming up and having super shows and really being like the fantasy that wrestling fans have. And until you see it, you just, you don't want to give your hopes up. But, it's on screen. You got the Impact Tag Team Champions with the current AEW champion, the past AEW champion, and then a main star from New Japan. It's kind of wild when you see it all on the screen at the same time. It's hard to believe, but yeah, did not see this coming. And, hopefully it means we can get more interactions between all the companies and just keep piling all these shows together. It's great news. I'm so happy. I know it's probably not in my voice, but, we're all wrestling fans first and foremost. We'll have a lot of analysis tonight, but, this is kind of an amazing moment for me as a wrestling fan. So I just want to document that for posterity's sake.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a big moment, I mean, mm-hmm. There's kind of been teases of, hey, talent share, from New Japan to AEW. Clearly there's some sort of an agreement on the table, right? I mean, mm-hmm. we don't know the extent of it at this point or if and when others will be involved. Obviously there's a lot of big matches to be had, if those two companies, kind of, and not partner up, but just, share talent back and forth. There's a lot mm-hmm. On the table there. But specifically Moxley and Kenta, like mm-hmm. if you're, I'm going to play devil's advocate here. All right. And just talking about, Jon Moxley on AEW Dynamite, do you want that guy, like your key top babyface champion challenger to the championship? I mean, is it, Not a waste, but is it a poor use of his time on TV, working big angles with New Japan stars and not building up to his next key AEW match, whatever that is, whether it's Kenny Omega or something different? They're kind of using this time, this like prime time on AEW Dynamite on TNT, and I think they're threading the thread through for a Kenny Omega Jon Moxley match in the future. I still think that's kind of where they go for the main event of Revolution. But, I think there's an argument to be had, and I'm not advocating one way or the other, that, hey, like, Moxley and Kenta, take care of your business on your own time. Is any of that going through your head right now?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the initial burst is exciting. But, yeah, you run through all the options and what does this mean. If you take the example of AEW and Impact, for example, Impact's probably gotten a boost on their viewership, but it definitely feels like the lower tiered company and program at the moment compared to AEW. So if you're AEW, you have to really worry about, do we look like we get, New Japan's, sixth most popular wrestler going against our, you know, most popular wrestler? How does it make us look as a company? We just got to be careful. I think, right now in the moment, it's very cool. And if you can get that match on American television, it gives Moxley something to do, you know, after Omega potentially. And, you just got to take it a case-by-case basis. I think AEW's done a good job thus far threading the needle and looking like this peer company. And, if you're a casual fan watching AEW and nothing else, that's the key, I think, for fans mm-hmm. like us and people listening. I think we can distinguish pretty well, like, okay, this is awesome. So I like that Moxley's doing this, on cable and, on my New Japan World app at the same time concurrently. And, just as long as you get the casual fan to think that, there's lots of cool talent coming in and they get good matches and they don't think much else of that, I think it can be successful.
What do you think about the future of that match, like Moxley and Kenta? Obviously, it's going to happen in New Japan, mm-hmm. But you've introduced now a new character in Kenta to your show, to Dynamite, and to that audience. And I think if Tony Khan is smart, he's saying to himself, not everybody necessarily is going to know who this guy is or why he mm-hmm. matters in the framework of being involved with Jon Moxley. Do you take this down a different angle? Like, is this something where, yeah, they're going to have that match for the IWGP United States title, for New Japan, but like, is this a feud that now crosses both companies where you're going to see a match in AEW between those two? I mean, how do you book this thing to make sure that needle is threaded in the right way?
Yeah, I mean, man, that's a lot. Right now, I mean, I would say I would use the NWA Women's Championship as a example of what not to do. Not that it's been a total disaster. It's just very confusing having Thunder Rosa originally and then Serena Deeb now defending that belt and it not really making much sense and not really elevating anyone that is part of it. With NWA not having any content really right now, it's not really elevating them either. So I digress. But I think they have to be very careful having, Kenta, if he wins and beats Moxley, defending that belt on AEW television. I just think it's further confuses the audience that's watching that isn't very aware. They're thinking all these belts. You have the FTW belt. You've got the NWA Women's Championship. You have that championship. It just can get really confusing. So, I think if they can get Kenta and have him in a feud with someone, an Eddie Kingston to start as an example, if Kenta's going to, or Lance Archer, depending on how he's positioned, I think that works a lot better to build him as a high mid-card act and potentially someone that you can use in the same vein as Pac, who might not be your world champion, but can be someone that you can put in and have a really good match with somebody. I think that's really the key with his character and borrowing his talent.
Yeah, I think where I'm at with it is I'm right there with you. I think for me, it's like, I think if you're going to introduce, and I think they've done a decent job, with the Good Brothers in this way, where you introduce them to your audience, your own audience on TNT as a relatively big deal. They're around the champion. And then they're actually wrestling matches. They're not just on the periphery. And I think, if you're going to do this big angle at the end of a heavily promoted, show, this is like, Beach Break, right? Like, it's mm-hmm. a kind of a named episode of Dynamite. You got to assume you're going to have some eyeballs on this. And in the main event, Kenta comes out. I think the key is, regardless of how you go, like whichever direction, whether it's a match for New Japan and then a separate match with Jon Moxley here, I think you just want to make it seem like this is the star that you brought in, and not just somebody on the outside, but somebody that's now involved with your company too. I mean, you don't want to just have I don't think you want to lean heavily on, hey, these one-off appearances just to further feuds outside of your company. As long as you can kind of keep it tied to the core of what's happening on Dynamite and within the AEW storylines and the AEW universe, I think this could work. And I thought Kenta, man, he he looked like a star out there today. Mm-hmm. Like, he had a presence about him. You know, he didn't do a lot, right? I mean, he wasn't out there for longer than, you know, 15 seconds maybe. But mm-hmm. He did have that presence that said, hey, you know, pay attention to me. This is, you know, I'm a big deal and what I'm doing here is important. And I thought commentary sold it well, too, to kind of tell you that this is an important moment. So I give AEW some good marks as far as that goes.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, you know, to backtrack to your point a little bit, with people outside the company not feeling like they're in the ecosystem, you know, again, I use the women's division as an example. And when they first started with, you know, all the Japanese talent that, you know, there's a lot of good workers there, but it was very confusing on, you know, are these people part of the ecosystem? Are they part of the Nyla Rose, Britt Baker, part of AEW? You know, and that kind of disconjoined the women's division to start. So, yeah, I think having characters come in and feel like they're part of it is very key. So I think that's a great point.
If you're Tony Khan and you have Jon Moxley here, right? Mm-hmm. And he's a top star in your company. He also has a lot going on. He's got this Kenta thing. He's got the thing going with Kenny Omega. There's you know, a pay-per-view coming up on the horizon. He hasn't had like his rematch for the belt. You know, where do you go with him? You know, in the next 6 weeks leading up to that pay-per-view. I mean, you're going to do the Kenta match. I mean, how, if you're booking this thing, how long do you lean on that? And, you know, do you shift to Kenny Omega or do you kind of keep that on the back burner for something, you know, deeper into the future?
Yeah. I mean, if I'm booking, it depends, you know, what my availability with Kenta is week to week, but I would probably use that as a holistic story between the three of them, and not that Kenta and Omega would have anything together, but have the story where Moxley is just overstretching himself and, you know, trying to, you know, beat everybody, win every title in his own way and have that be the thing that, you know, he loses his, you know, his U.S. title in New Japan and then he loses his rematch and then he's got to kind of, you know, maybe go on a small hero's journey and kind of climb back up the ladder. And, you know, that's what Moxley should be doing is chasing almost all the time, unless he's going to, you know, have a good run like he did before. But that's a way to kind of not bottom him out, but put him on, you know, a lower rung and give him something to chase. So some combination of that with him losing everything and having to build himself back up, I think would be a good story to tell with him.
Yeah. 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 I think so. And I think, you know, there's enough there. I thought, you know, now that you have this Kenta card to play, I feel like it almost gives Jon Moxley a little bit more range because really, like, he was the AEW World Champion. He's been tied to Kenny Omega, but there's just so much time in between, you know, that first title match on the Winter Is Coming show and then, you know, Revolution. And he's kind of just not floundering is the wrong word because I don't think Jon Moxley ever flounders. He's too talented to do so in whatever segment he's in. Pops, but he's just kind of been in this holding pattern where you're not, you know, you're kind of waiting for him to go after Kenny Omega and the title again, but it's too early. It's too early. The pay-per-view is, you know, further down the road. You know, this does give him a nice, you know, kind of pause and a stop in the road to kind of take care of that business either on the way to a Revolution main event or, you know, put that match off further and, you know, give him something else to sink his teeth into. So I like this turn of events for that reason as well, outside of just the novelty of, hey, a top tier new Japan star is on TNT.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I agree.
Yeah. All right. Well, we got a lot of other stuff that we should get to. We're going to open up to callers here. We got to talk that the wedding. I'm sure there'll be a multitude of calls on that. But before we do, let's set the table and just set the table for the show. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show covering the February 3rd, 2021 edition of AEW Dynamite Beach Break. I'm PW Torch Assistant Editor Zach Cadorn filling in for Wade tonight. Wade will be on the VIP side of things with his rundown and analysis of the show. And you can check out the Wade Keller hotline for that. PWTorch.com/GoVIP. If you're interested in a VIP membership, that's PWTorch.com/GoVIP. The other voice with me tonight is that of PW Torch contributor and host of the PW Torch VIP exclusive podcast, Podcast of Honor, Tyler Sage. Tyler, welcome back to the show. Great to talk to you.
Hey, thanks for having me. And quite the show to do the post show, so I'm very excited for it.
I am too. Yeah, we've got, I'd say we have like a wide spectrum of stuff. Stuff on like the really good, like we just talked about, and then some stuff that I'm in the camp of anyway that's just yuck. Like just not good. And I'm sure we'll cover it all. We'll open up the phone lines here. 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. If you guys are on the line there and want to get in on the action on the show, press 1 to let me know, and we'll make sure to bring you on. 410 is in there, 419-305. We will get to all you guys here in a second. Tyler and I will also hit the emails a little bit later. WadeKellerPodcast@gmail.com. If you don't feel like chatting tonight, go ahead and send us an email there, WadeKellerPodcast@gmail.com. And as I said, we'll hit that the email bag in a little bit. But with that said, Tyler, if you're ready to go, let's go ahead and let's take the first call here.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. We will start the night off with 410. 410, go ahead and state your name and where you're calling from.
Reverend Keith Bennett in Baltimore. How are you two doing tonight?
Fantastic, Keith. Always great to talk to you. What did you think of Dynamite?
Wow, what a show. It had everything. As the two of you have already mentioned, Kenta has a presence about him. You know, he's always intense, he's focused, and he will be a game changer. Now, I do feel that AEW and Tony Khan has to caution themselves from convoluting some of the storylines and some of their main players. As the two of you just spoke of, Mox is in a feud with both Kenny Omega and Kenta. However, being that he is the IWGP United States champion, this opens doors for not only Mox and Kenta on AEW programming, but also Mox and Kenta on Impact programming, other New Japan Pro Wrestling stars perhaps will follow suit, but there is a gray area there that, you know, Tony Khan needs to be very cautious about, because you don't want to get people confused and you don't want to throw too many storylines together at the same time. Also, it's interesting to note that Shaq and Jade versus Velvet and Cody is now going to be on the March 3rd edition of Dynamite. And before I let you go and before you discuss these two bullet points, I want to ask you, do you think that this will be a red herring and they will still wrestle at Revolution, or do you think that Tony Khan is going for the pop in the ratings and just have that big tag team match on Dynamite? Thanks for taking my calls, and I look forward to hearing your responses to my point.
Thank you very much, Keith. It's always, as I said, always great to hear from you. Great, great topics. Really, really appreciate it. Yeah. Let's just chat about the Shaq thing real quick. They announced the tag team match tonight. It's going to take place on March 3rd. Tyler, I'll throw to you first. What in your head, hearing that, were you surprised? Were you kind of wondering, okay, is this is the start of a bigger angle that we'll see pay it off later? Where's your head at on that?
Yeah, I mean, so my instinct on this, I was A, little surprised, B, a little relieved, and C, I think that Tony Khan in general has shown the ability to listen and to pivot when things are not working out very well. I think even last week with Cody's promo with Arn Anderson, was that last week? It kind of blends together. That even he, you could see that he was even kind of mentally checked out on this, it seemed to me. So not to bring it back to last week, but to me, this is a ratings grab. And it's also something that I think Tony realizes not being well received week to week. And, you know, if it's on a pay-per-view, it's going to be critiqued a lot longer in history. It's easier to pick apart a match that happens on a pay-per-view as opposed to a match that happens on a episode of television. And I think that's kind of those two things are the leading causes of putting it on TV. Now, I could be very wrong and it leads to a match at Revolution, because then what does Cody have to do at Revolution? You know, you don't want to leave him off what seems to be two pay-per-views in a row. So I'm a bit worried about that, but, you know, that's kind of my overall take on it at the moment.
Yeah, I kind of think this is the way to go, honestly, because it is, you know, been poorly received, because they weren't able to go the way they wanted to. And it's just, and because it probably wasn't going to end up being all that effective anyway, regardless of who was involved. You add that on to the fact that it was just, you know, snake bitten from the start. I just think there's nothing wrong with just putting it on TV. It does beg the point, okay, what does Cody do at Revolution? So I think we'll have to see how that plays out. The other thing here that I'm looking at, the dates of this. So March 3rd is the go-home show to Revolution, because Revolution would happen then on that following Sunday, I believe. So you could – Tony Khan could be looking at this and going, all right, well, hey, we're going to have this go-home show. We're going to put this Shaq match on the go-home show in an effort to pop that rating, but pop it at a time where, hey, they're looking to sell pay-per-views. And so, that could be a viable strategy as long as they, you know, build the rest of the show, you know, in a way that really, you know, emphasizes those other matches, whatever the main event match is, the stuff with Sting and Darby. I think if you can use that enhanced audience, assume that you get one because of Shaq's presence, and get, you know, some extra pay-per-view buys out of it because you have a good go-home show, that could be just a shrewd business move in the end.
Yeah, and, you know, there's always a way to have that match on that Wednesday. Maybe somebody comes out and attacks Shaq, and then Cody defends Shaq, and then that's the, you know, it's Cody versus person X with Shaq in his corner at the pay-per-view to still get some of that Shaq rub. And then, you know, whatever. I mean, there's a million ways you can go. So that would be an ideal pivot from what this has been thus far. So
yeah. Well, it would. And I think, yeah, I mean, as weird as this next sentence is going to sound, Cody kind of fighting for Shaq's honor is probably the best case scenario at this point than anything else. But hey, like, and look, I don't think, you know, Shaq does not have the type of impact, you know, on ratings or, you know, eyeballs that he would have, you know, 10 years ago or whatever. He just, I just don't think he has that anymore, you know, period. But if he can bring in 100,000 more viewers or 200,000 more, and AEW can do a good job of, you know, building that go home show around that match and get the rest of the Revolution card to a boiling point where people can tune into that one show and fully understand where everything's at with all these other matches, you know, maybe it does do some business. And that would be kind of like the business model of TNT working with AEW shining, I guess. Again, I don't know if Shaq can move the needle, but even if he moves it a little bit, I mean, I think that, you know, makes everything worth it, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I agree.
Okay, back to Kenny Omega and Kenta and John Moxley. Keith brought up what I think is a good point. You don't want to do too much. You don't want to. It's almost like you don't want to spread John Moxley too thin with all this stuff. I think Keith is right. You need to pay attention to that. But I don't think right now, as it stands today, even after that angle, that fans are confused yet. I think that they, you know, they'll tell this story about, you know, John Moxley defending this championship against Kenta. That'll kind of be there. I think they have this simmering rematch with Kenny Omega on the other side of things with John Moxley. I don't think it's gotten muddy yet, but I do think that, yes, you want to pay attention to that.
Yeah, absolutely. And probably with Moxley, you probably have to do it, you know, one, he's got to focus on somebody each week. You can't have him intermix with Kenta for the promo after the first match and then messing with Kenny in the main event. You just got to keep it pretty straightforward. Like, hey, this week it's Kenta related, or this week it's a Kenny related thing. And they've done a good job thus far. I mean, this is a little different, but, you know, like you alluded to earlier with the Good Brothers, you know, they feel like their interactions on AEW are AEW and not Impact related. And they've done a pretty good job of not highlighting a ton of what happens on Impact with, you know, Private Party and going for the belt. I mean, they allude to it a little bit, but it's not confusing. So I think they've shown a good track record of being able to handle it. This will be, you know, the maximum exposure of it, but I'm hopeful that they'll be able to pull it off.
Yeah. Well said. Okay, back to phones here. 347-215-8558. If you want to jump on, 347-215-8558. Press 1 to let me know you're ready to go. Right now, though, we'll go to 419. 419, go ahead and state your name and where you're calling from.
It's Craig from Toledo.
Hey, Craig. Great to hear from you, man. What'd you think of Dynamite?
I thought it was a good show. I was pretty preoccupied
good show.
Throughout
That's
it.
That's kind of where I'm at, too. That's kind of where I'm
I was pretty preoccupied during it, and I got, like, the inspiration to write a book in the middle of it. And based on, the last time I actually had fun, which was our time in Chicago, you know.
That was fun. That was fun. So what did you like about the show, and then what did you not like?
Well, there's a couple things I wanted to bring up. You guys have been talking about the fans being confused. I think the fans should be confused, and I think it's a good thing, because I was confused back when everybody was talking about AJ Styles versus Shinsuke. And I remember this is before either of them joined WWE, but I was like compelled by all the chatter to check out this match. And I watched it on a plane, and I just happened to be sitting right behind Earl Hebner, and he borrowed my pen, so that was cool. And the whole TNA roster was on that plane. It was insane. But I think it's good for fans to be curious about. And I know it hurts the casual audience, but I think if you develop your casual audience into a more hardcore, I wouldn't say, but based in all right. Into more of a audience that cares. I think that wrestling fans, if they search us out, and there's plenty of us, trust me, we can help them along and guide them through it. And it's not that hard. It's okay to be confused, because it's not that confusing. And that you strengthen your base in that way. Do you guys understand what I'm trying to say?
Yeah. So do you mean like somebody going, "Hey, wow, this Kenta guy, I wonder who that is. I got to go watch some of his matches." Is that kind of what you're saying? Like,
yeah,
to just get caught up on who he is.
What the hell is this briefcase they keep talking about? Yeah. Stuff like that. It's
yeah.
Just, you know, I want to know more about it. Like, this guy looks interesting. It was a surprise. So, naturally, people are going to be curious about it, and, you know.
Well, I think that's an interesting point. I mean, because – and I think on one hand, you know, if you're just looking at it from a strictly, you know, fan perspective, yeah, it could create, like, could go down a YouTube rabbit hole or, hey, what's this New Japan World thing? And I think it begs a lot of questions about that Kenta guy. I think the other side of that coin is, well, what does it do for AEW right now? Like, what does it do to build up John Moxley? What does it do to, to enhance Kenny Omega's title reign? What does it do for, you know, ratings on Dynamite, right? And I think, you know, that's kind of where I don't mean necessarily confusion. I just mean, you know, you only got so much time on TNT every single week, and if people are leaving that show going, man, I'm going to go check out all this Kenta stuff, you know, I think that you can look at that and go, okay, you don't want them necessarily talking about New Japan Kenta stuff. You want them to pivot back and go, all right, what does this new character mean for AEW on TNT every week in this company? Tyler, what's your take? Where are you at?
Yeah, you know, as Craig was pitching that, I can only think of, like, for example, WandaVision, which I think most people are at least aware of or watching, or any of the Marvel movies. And I kind of think of that in wrestling in the same vein of, you know, there is like a base story with all the MCU things that almost everyone can get their mind around. And then there's a ton of Easter eggs and fun little things that you can watch in every episode of WandaVision, for example. And then you know, you can watch the episode and go and look for all the Easter eggs online and things like that. So I kind of get the same feeling there of like wrestling. Like you can have tiers of fans who, you know, watch it and understand it. And then, you know, you can go online and see like, okay, what is this briefcase? What is this New Japan stuff? All that stuff. So I think the comp is similar. And then, yeah, I agree with you too, Zach, about you said to make sure that it elevates Moxley. Like you want them to go watch the Kenta Moxley matches and see how awesome Moxley has been in Japan and just build his character. And maybe they go back and see all the Omega and Okada things and all that stuff, you know, then those guys are elevated just based on, you know, what hardcore fans know already. And I think even if you get
true.
a swath of fans who delve in a little deeper, and then that makes casual fans into whatever in between casual and hardcore is, you know, not that there is one, but someone that is more likely to, whatever the metric is, right, you know, watch for a year from now, are they watching yes or no? That's probably a rough metric, but if they're delving into extra stuff, they're more likely to be watching this time next year as opposed to not. So I think that's something that's positive.
Yeah, that's a good point. And there is a lot of Kenny Omega stuff, you know, to check out. Yeah, go ahead, Craig.
Because I don't even check out, like, you know, if you hear one of Rich's shows and Alan Cunahan and Will Cooling and, the, you know, all these guys on the VIP, it's like, I don't know who you're talking about, and I don't have, you know, I mean, I do have enough time, but I just don't have enough patience, I guess, to go through everything that you guys are talking about to see all the people that you're recommending that I watch. But if I hear you talk about them, I will be more likely to look them up, especially if they show up on a show I watch. So, and I love that there's not exclusivity on AEW as there is in WWE, because when you're in WWE, it's like you're almost in prison. And this way, you actually have dream matches that are possible.
Yeah. I like every time I hear Don Callis call Kenny Omega, you know, the wrestling god. And, you know, you remember what, you know, Kota Ibushi's been calling himself, you know, these days. You just, it just triggers in my head, man. There, that's a big piece of business right there. If they can make that match happen. Craig, what else tonight stood out to you?
One more thing. The wedding, bros. The wedding. I have to bring up the wedding. I'm the guy. I'm the guy that loved the wedding.
Did you,
I like
did you say
the,
you love the wedding,
I like
or
the,
you wanted
what,
to bring it up?
I both. I had to bring it up, and I loved it. You know, the what's in the box part. I was confused about like an empty box. I thought it was a gift, and nope, there was something in it. It was handcuffs, and it made sense. I thought it was funny. I thought it was fun. They made. And having that crowd sing that song, What is Love, Baby Don't Hurt, just like totally like organically, it just brought me back to back when there was fans and we could do that stuff. I loved it. It's corny, and they'll probably maybe do a better job at doing weddings in the future, but I love that. I love that thing. I thought it was well booked.
Yeah, all right. I'm gonna respectfully disagree with you on that one. I mean, I think what you mentioned is like, sure. Was it fun? Yes. Was the crowd part fun? Sure. Did I get a chuckle out of some parts? Absolutely. I had a problem with a couple things. One being, first of all, I thought it was really long. I thought it was just a long segment that just kind of played itself out in a way that by the like at the 70% mark, I was like, all right, let's get on with this already. Like we kind of know where it's going at this point. So let's get moving. The other thing that kind of rubbed me the wrong way was, and Tyler, I'm interested to, maybe you can break the tie here in either direction, but I thought that the baby faces kind of came across as a little mean for breaking up this wedding, because they, you know, it wasn't like this over the top kind of arrogant.
They didn't.
Hold on, Zach.
They did not break up the wedding. They didn't break up the wedding. They got wed. They let them be wed.
That's like saying if I get married and then a couple buddies of mine get into a huge fight during the reception and roll over the cake, that they didn't interrupt the wedding. I mean, like, sure, we're married at that point, but they still caused quite a scene.
Get Reverend Keith back on the line. I want to hear his thoughts.
Well, hey, look, and I'm going to go to my third place. The third part is I just for Orange Cassidy in particular, I think that there's a higher ceiling for him here. And this is just kind of the straight, you know, wrestling analysis part of this. I continually putting him in positions like that, where he's coming out of the cake and he's kind of doing these funny bits. I think it's funny, and I think it does work for his character, and I think he does a really good job of at it. But at the same time, I just see him as somebody who can be bigger and be more serious and be effective, like, outside of those roles. And it's like, eventually, I just want to see AEW kind of hit go on that part of the Orange Cassidy character and not just the comedy stuff. So that's my 3 points. Tyler, break the tie, my friend.
So I'm going to start very positive here. I popped audibly when it was announced that, you know, I now pronounce you man and wife, you know, the power invested in me by Tony Khan in AEW. I thought it was amazing that Tony Khan has the power to wed now. So I did enjoy that. Beyond that, though, you know, a segment like this, I think of, you know, the basic questions: who, what, when, where, why. And if this happens, for example, this whole segment, and this is getting a little in the weeds, and we're intermixing promotions now with this example, but GCW and a big indie show this past weekend, 24-hour, you know, live wrestling, kind of like an indie super show. This felt like something that would go on there, and I would have loved it with a bunch of performers that, you know, are doing comedy stuff. But, you know, in this setting, for how long it went and with the characters involved, it didn't work for me. It was, like you said, Zach, way too long. I think it downgraded Orange Cassidy. Yeah, I've not really enjoyed Kip Sabian's character whatsoever, and I think Miro's been downgraded by this too. So it was long and not super enjoyable based on who was involved. You know, if this was Luther and Serpentico and whatever, if this was on AEW Dark, all that, I would have no problem with it whatsoever. But it was elevated to a level and not executed well enough for me to work. And I don't know, it just seemed a little bit like it had gone off the rails at certain points. And, it, you know, if you're going to do something like this, it's got to be kind of tight. And I just felt like it was pretty loose all around, and it didn't work for me.
Craig, are you still going to listen to our stuff now that we disagreed with you on this?
No, I got a comeback, dude. Ring a Tyler, ring a Tyler. You just said you would have loved it on GCW. You'd have loved it on Dark. But you didn't love it tonight. Are you afraid of them to fail? Because I don't think you should go into anything too afraid to fail. I think a lot of casual fans, the ones that they're going for or whatever we claim they're trying to go for or stuff like that, and we throw around words like elevated and push and stuff like that. I think people who watched that had fun. Like the one Bad Bunny, the only way that got shouted out after Royal Rumble was the Bad Bunny thing, and the they showed Snoop Dogg on Highly Questionable and stuff like that. It's just like, some people just have fun watching this stupid thing, and then they get more involved in it, and I just think we're really, I mean, you talk about in the weeds. I think we're in the weeds as, like, hardcore fans that want to see everything work out to it, especially the degree that we expect it to. And it, Tyler.
Yeah, no, I'm definitely, you know, Craig, I'm open to your point. And, you know, just because something doesn't work for me in the moment, and, you know, there's probably some bias there of me wanting it to work. You know, I think you're right with that. You know, I think my only tweet tonight was, I want to see the quarter hour ratings. I just want to see this versus NXT. Because I certainly, if this works, I think having one segment like this and tightening it up every week, if that builds the audience, that's great with me. I love jokey wrestling. Like, Danhausen's a character on Ring of Honor who's a complete and utter comic, you know, wrestler, and I love him. I don't have the same expectations for ROH because, you know, it's not as popular. So, you know, I think it can work. I just, you know, I don't know if Kip and Miro are the right people for it. But, you know, I'm open to it, and I'm very curious to see what the ratings are for it. And I certainly, you know, I'd rather AEW in wrestling in general be more popular. So I hope you're right.
Can I give you a one-person rating? I'll let you go right after this. Can I give you a one-person rating?
Sure.
Go ahead. Do it.
I said I was really distracted tonight. I barely saw the Jon Moxley coming down to the ring, and he's my favorite wrestler. But I watched every second of that wedding. So that's my one-person rating, and I watched the entire G1 at live the morning of. And so I don't know.
Yeah.
It's a wild ride. And thanks for taking my call, guys. Have a good night.
Hey, thanks for making it, Craig, and I appreciate, you know, always. Hey, I like nothing more than people calling up and defending their point. So appreciate the call, and we'll talk soon. Okay, let's keep the callers rolling here. Let's go to, 443. We'll go to 443 next. 443, go ahead and state your name and where you're calling from.
Hi, this is Chris from Manchester.
Chris, thanks for calling. What'd you think of AEW Dynamite tonight?
I know a lot of guys calling in pretty happy with things, but I'm just so frustrated with AEW. And I mean, I've been watching wrestling for 20 plus years, and I was so excited about AEW. I mean, I went to Full Gear here in Baltimore, the first pay-per-view they had, went to, I think, their third or fourth taping of Dynamite up in Philly. And they're just not doing so many things, I feel like, right. And it's just so easy.
What's on the top of your mind as far as that goes?
I mean, I just think they're not utilizing so many people the correct way. I mean, Matt Hardy, you've got this guy who, you know, was one of the biggest stars in wrestling a couple years back. WWE brings him in. They completely drop the ball. No shock there. And then he goes to AEW, and he's basically, I mean, what is he doing now? I mean, you could almost put anybody in that role. I mean, it doesn't have to be for him. I mean, Rusev or whatever they're now, I mean, I think everybody can agree that that's been a colossal bust. I mean, I don't even understand why you even brought him in to do that. The Darby Allin and Sting nonsense. I mean, how many times? I mean, I know you guys have been complaining about this too, but I mean, how many times are they going to put them in the ring with Tony and then have Taz interrupt? I mean, this seriously has to be like the eighth consecutive week of this.
Let's pause there, actually, Chris, real quick.
Sorry.
Hey, Chris, let me pause it right there because I have that note. That I wanted to make sure that we talk about, and I'm glad you brought it up in regards to Darby Allin and Sting and Team Taz. I agree with you on that sentiment in particular. I've really been waiting for this feud to kind of go, and I think they laid a good foundation from the start. I thought they really, you know, painted in the onset, they painted Team Taz as this kind of vicious group and this bad group of heels that you wanted to see get theirs. I thought Darby Allin was a real sympathetic babyface, but also one that had some credibility opposite that group, because he had some, you know, he had some wins over them. He stood up to Taz when Taz was, you know, trying to take him under his wing, and you know, you kind of saw that story played out. So I thought they really laid a nice foundation here. But I'm waiting for this feud, Tyler, to get into the next gear. It's like we very much have seen this play out the same way for 3-4 weeks, where it's like these guys are in the ring, Team Taz either walks out onto the stage or does a backstage, you know, promo of some kind, and then it's kind of, that's kind of it. I mean, I know Sting's, you know, older. I know he's not going to be in that ring taking a lot of bumps, but man, you have this street fight coming up at Revolution. I think you got to have some sort of segment or some sort of angle where you get Team Taz some legit heat, legit credibility as heels in this feud. And I think that means getting a little physical with Sting in a safe way. I mean, look, if he's going to be in this match, you still have to build it effectively. Darby Allin, of course, you know, you can do that with him. And I think he's like the perfect foil for that, because he is such a babyface that has sympathy attached to him. But I'm waiting for this thing to get out of second gear and get rolling. They have time, and I don't know that it's completely off the rails yet, Chris, but I'm very much with you in the camp of, hey, let's get on with this thing, and let's build some heat around Team Taz. The match isn't that far away. Tyler, your take.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, I think this is a situation where, you know, Sting was introduced and they put him with Darby right away, and they felt like they needed Sting on TV every week and to boost a rating, and that's obviously not the case. I mean, this feud should have started maybe last week or this week to build, you know, this 6-week-esque story to Revolution, and you know, it's just there's not a lot of story there, and they're stretching it out because you can't get physical. So you know, just a prime example of what not to do with Sting in the future. And also, I mean, I think Team Taz has been damaged by this at this point, because even look at tonight, like they cut into video and they're like, hey, we're barred from the arena tonight and we'll get you next week. Like, wouldn't like badass heels like break in and attack them in the middle of the ring? Not be like, well, we were asked to not come in. So sorry about that. You know, the whole thing is just has devalued all those guys, in my opinion. And they're going to need rehabilitated people that they're high on, like Ricky Starks, I would think. And yeah, I mean, they should just be wrestling like the Varsity Blondes at the, you know, 8:53 mark of the show and get a win and look dominant and treat them like Inner Circle a little bit. And you know, it's been dropped, I think, pretty badly with that group.
Yeah, and I don't want to be too, I mean, I don't want to be too down on it, because I think it's not like irreparable. Like, I think you can't, like, Sting and Darby, I think, are over enough as baby faces. You can get this thing on the right track, but you just got to get there. And Darby Allin's going to defend the TNT championship next week against Joey Janela. Maybe that's an avenue in which they can do that. Sting's already said he's going to be ringside, so maybe that's coming. And if it is, great. It needs it. But we've still gone through this kind of 3-4 week period of this thing kind of stalling out. So I think next week is really important to kind of the future of this feud and how hot they can get this this program before pay-per-view, because you got to get some heat back on Team Taz. Chris, great point. And back to you for more grievances.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. Why don't you have – I mean, I don't think I can't even think back. Have we ever seen Team Taz ever, like, beat anybody up fairly in the last, like, month or two? I mean, it's a great stable, and yet, you know, they pretty much just cut promos. The last time I can remember seeing any of them in the ring is what's his name? The big man. I can't think of his name right now. Big guy who challenged Darby and got and lost. I mean, yeah, they need to have these guys in the ring, you know, taking on jobbers and just tearing them apart. But the other thing is, I mean, if the Young Bucks, somebody needs to completely, if they're booking their own storylines right now, somebody needs to just completely step in and strip them of any writing duties, because I've watched every episode of Dynamite and I watch Impact. I feel like I'm missing
entire episodes or something, like an entire season's worth of episodes. I mean, what in the world is going on? One week they're, you know, they come out and they help them, and then the next week they're attacking. They help the Good Brothers, and then the next week, you know, they're beating up Kenny's manager, and then the next week they're teaming up, and then this week there's nothing mentioned. I mean, who's writing this stuff? I mean, I feel so lost, and I haven't missed ever an episode. I mean, what is going on with that?
Yeah, Tyler, I'll throw to you first on that one. Can you make sense of what's going on with the Young Bucks? Because, you know, I can't.
Yeah, I would say they have a not great track record of telling stories that involves them. And you can put Adam Page in that category too, because I would assume they have a lot of influence on his storyline as well. You know, things. Yeah, like getting 70% of the way there and then kind of dropping off for a couple weeks and then picking back up. And you know, like even the angle with Callis, you know, I thought they might have told the story where they didn't actually beat up Don Callis, and he gave himself a makeup black eye to make Kenny turn on them. And, you know, I thought that was a pretty interesting story. Then they just kind of dropped it. And then, yeah, the Good Brothers, you know, you kind of get the vibe like, okay, they're going to fight each other. Then they say it out loud, you know, last week or 2 weeks ago, and then nothing tonight. And they weren't really involved in them losing. And yeah, it's just, it's kind of all over the place. And I think they're not putting themselves first when it comes to booking. I think they're trying to, you know, not be guys that are being selfish in their mind, but I don't know. I think they need to focus on themselves and tell a better story with them. Yeah, it's not been great.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, they have to get this ironed out because there is just too much, you know, herky-jerky back and forth. And I think, you know, you can't stop and start with that kind of story that they're telling between, you know, with all the balls in the air. It's like you gotta keep them going at some point if you're gonna get them up there. And in this case, it's like, you know, the biggest kind of point that I don't think they've addressed fully is just the dissension between them and Kenny Omega, because that was kind of the big part, right? I think the Good Brothers issue, that's there, that's on the periphery, but you had this moment where it's like Kenny Omega is not on the same page with the Young Bucks. Like, to me, that's the big story, right? Mm-hmm. But I think the problem is, in analyzing this angle with them, there could be a lot of quote unquote big stories depending on who you are. And if you're kind of more focused on the Good Brother thing, then you're kind of spending your time there. And it just tells me that they've got just too much happening. And I think they really need to take a step back, think about, all right, where are we going in the next 5 weeks? Where are we going in the lead up to Revolution? And iron that out. Are we baby faces or are we heels? Okay, let's pick one and let's then go that direction. Are we going to be on the same page with the Good Brothers or are we not? Or like, just, you got to, like, you can't just have this perpetual state of wanting the audience to kind of figure out the story for themselves. I think that works here and there as long as these characters have, you know, definition behind them. But I don't think the Young Bucks do. And I think that leads to a lot of mixed feelings and a lot of confusion based on who they interact with and how they interact with different characters on the show on a week to week basis. So, yeah, I mean, they need to iron this out. Tyler, any idea where they go with them on pay-per-view at this point in 6 weeks? I mean, is it the Good Brothers match?
Well, I mean, MJF and Jericho won the Battle Royal, right?
So, oh, right. Duh. Yeah. Okay.
So,
yeah.
But that's even to the point of, like, that's going to be the main story, and that's obviously leading. I'm sure we'll talk about that later, so I don't want to get into that too much now. But, you know, the Young Bucks are secondary in that storyline. It's all about MJF and Jericho. And, again, it's like, not really, are we supposed to wait until May, a Double or Nothing for the Good Brothers? And, you know, is that going to be Moxley and Omega? Moxley and the Bucks against, you know, Omega and the Good Brothers and some sort of blow off main event thing, or you know, it's a long time away to tell a story that we all see right in front of us, and they're not doing a great job telling. So yeah, they need to tighten it up for sure.
Yeah. To me, it's all about definition. I think the Young Bucks are good enough; they can pull off either way, whether the babyface kind of storyline or a heel kind of storyline. You know, they can make it work. But you know, at some point, you got to pick a lane, and you know, I think it's high time that they do. Chris, thanks so much. Any final points for us tonight?
Yeah, I'll try to wrap it up here. The other thing that I just can't wrap my head around is, I just don't feel like, I mean, you and I know that Dean Ambrose is a star. Kenny Omega, they're doing better with him, even though the first year was a complete disaster. I mean, if you didn't know anything about his New Japan career, I mean, there's no reason to believe that he's some great star. But even with Ambrose, I mean, you know, there'll be weeks where he was just not there, and you'll have a random tag team main event with, you know, like Brody Lee's former group, and I'm just like, this should be the main event of some, you know, untelevised web Shotgun Saturday Night, Sunday Night Heat kind of version of AEW. Your main event, you should be making clear that everybody knows these are your main stars. I mean, even SmackDown, it hurts my soul to say this, but even SmackDown, I mean, you watch that and you know Roman Reigns is the star of that show. If I was a complete stranger and I'm tuning in to AEW, I don't think I'd have any idea who's supposed to be the top dog in that company. I mean, it's just a mystery. And you look throughout the history of wrestling. Wrestling is big when you have stars. I mean, when you build a show around a star, and I just don't see them doing it. It's just, it's non-existent. And I'll end it with that. And, you know, I'll end my list of grievances.
No, I appreciate that, Chris. And thanks for calling. I really appreciate it. Make sure to call again. Yeah, Tyler, I think Chris made some good points. I push back on that, I think. And just because, you know, I think Jon Moxley is a big star. I think the show is focused on him. I think Kenny Omega as a heel and as the champion has kind of been now kind of perched at the top of the show and at the top of the company to be, you know, that guy that the show revolves around. I think they could still do better in that regard, you know, in terms of just presenting him in a big way, but I also like the fact that he's not wrestling every week. You know, he's not on the show wrestling all the time. So I think that kind of absence makes the heart grow fonder as far as that goes. So I think when you look at your core of Jon Moxley, Kenny Omega, Cody, I think is somebody that you got to throw in there, even though he's, you know, a little bit off the beaten path now with what he's doing. Darby Allin is somebody that I think, you know, that the show kind of revolves around at times. I mean, it's kind of I guess it's an ensemble batch of stars, but I think that group are stars. And so I give more credit to AEW than Chris does in that regard. How about you?
Yeah, I do as well. I think, you know, if you look at how WWE does it, you know, long-term, you can see how that style of, and they truly do, you know, every Friday night, you know, Roman Reigns going to have a featured role, and he's going to, even when he was not a heel, you know, he's going to beat somebody or be in a tag with someone to beat him. Just, you know, the last 15, 20 years of WWE shows that, you know, that leads to 50-50 booking and no one really getting over except for maybe one person at the top that maybe the fans don't even like, and that leads to erosion and viewership and whatnot. And, you know, I think AEW is not perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but I think that they're closer to the true thing. Like, you know, could Kenny Omega have a segment where he's backstage with his, you know, flashy jacket and his glasses and he's, you know, doing some heel stuff and being on for 5 minutes on the show? And yeah, I mean, you could all improve that. And, you know, I think the example on everyone's mind when they bring up stuff like that is, you know, Stone Cold and, you know, 1998, where he's the opening segment, the middle segment, and a match at the end of the show. And, you know, there's not a million Stone Colds walking around. Obviously, we all know that. And also, you know, if you go back and watch those shows, they're not as great as everyone remembers them, if I can say that. And, you know, there's stuff to glean from that, and there's stuff to improve on. And, you know, I think they're like 70% of the way there for making stars and using people the right way. And yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, I think and they can do better. Like I think Kenny Omega in particular, Jon Moxley, I think they've found kind of the right tone with him when he's on, whether it's a promo or something pre-taped or a match. I mean, to me that feels big time. Like that feels like, you know, the star of the show, is there. You know, he's now walked onto the TV, and I think the small reaction that there is now because of the lack of number of fans, there still is that reaction there when he walks out. So I think they've got that humming along nicely. But you know, Kenny Omega, they have done better. I still think, you know, he's grown into that spot. But man, it is frustrating at times to see him taking like the back seat, you know, just even like walking out with the Good Brothers tonight. It's like, mm-hmm. he very much fades into them as like that ensemble group rather than being Kenny Omega and everybody else is kind of behind him. And I don't mm-hmm. just mean like the look of them walking. I just mean, you know, he kind of does kind of blend into that background when he's in those situations. The frustrating part is when he's not, and when he does have this big, you know, title match against Jon Moxley on a heavily promoted Winter is Coming episode, he walks out there solo. I mean, that guy looks like a star when he does that. And so, mm-hmm. you know, you kind of see this, both Kenny Omegas. And I think he can still do a better job of making sure that, he's got his buddies behind him, but he's still the main attraction. He's still the act. And I think sometimes he blends in a little too much.
Yeah, I mean, he could take a note from Jericho in ring, or you know, in when he's on television, that, you know, Jericho's always felt like the big star of Inner Circle. You know, his music hits and everyone sings it while the rest of the guys walk out behind him, and you know, there's no Inner Circle music as far as I can tell. There might be, but yeah, I mean, it's just very clear who the stars of that group, who's the leader, and you know, just doing some subtle things to switch that up a little bit would help immensely.
Yeah. Yeah. Chris, good stuff. Great topics. Okay. We'll go back to the phones here. We're going to go to 305 and then 860. We'll go to you next. 305, go ahead and state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, Zach. Hey, Tyler. It's Javier. How's it going?
Good, Javier. We, you know, kind of, you know, moved you up in the queue today. What did you think of Dynamite?
Well, I was losing my mind at the end there. Hope, do you two mind if I take a quick victory lap?
Why not?
Because I sure hope somebody picks up that phone because I freaking called it.
Just remind us, those who maybe didn't hear. What did you call?
Well, I'll remind Tyler, who apparently didn't listen to me last week on the Bo show. I've been seeing a lot of smoke signals in between of, you know, the crossover and bleed over of talent. Now, I thought that we were going to see Jay White be the guy showing up because since he had done the whole, you know, I quit New Japan angle. But then he, you know, he showed up in New Japan, but he starts calling out Kenny Omega because in New Japan he showed up, beat up Ishii, and basically said that, you know, I'm real Bullet Club. There are these reunions happening. They're fake just to sell their you know, bleep, you know, expletive T-shirts. And so, yeah, I mean, and what I found really interesting, because some of the stuff that you guys didn't talk about during the match, is Archer comes out, and this is going to be an aside, but Archer comes out and attacks the Good Brothers, and commentary mentions that they have history. Which makes me think, does that make you think we might end up seeing Davey Boy Jr. show up as a tag partner for Archer?
Gosh, I mean, it could be, right? I mean, I at this point, like, you know, as Rich Fan put it on Twitter, like, the forbidden door is open. So it's like you never – I mean, I guess anything's on the table at this point, right, Tyler?
Yeah, probably so. I mean, that would not be my first choice to make sure that's on the record. But, yeah, anything's possible. I think anyone that has not signed under WWE's umbrella, you know, why not, right? I mean, if you're any company that's not AEW, if you're ROH, if you're New Japan, if you're Impact, if you're an independent promotion, anyone I'm missing, you know, like, yeah, I'd want my person on TNT on Wednesday night and getting a million eyeballs on them. Yeah, no question asked. MLW, you know, all of them, so.
Yeah. Javier, what I mean, quickly here before you get to your other points, what do you make of the future of this, you know, angle? You know, I mean, how does it pay off for you? I mean, we know how it's going to pay off for New Japan, but how does it pay off for you in AEW on Dynamite?
Well, because that was the other thing that was mentioned that was said on commentary was because until that point, AEW has not mentioned Bullet Club. It has been mentioned on Impact. As a matter of fact, on the last pay-per-view, they actually wore Bullet Club gear. And they hadn't mentioned, you know, the word Bullet Club. I mean, they alluded to it, you know, in euphemism. But then the moment Kenta attacked, I think it was Tony said, does this mean that the rift between Bullet Club has been healed? So at that moment, they start dropping the name Bullet Club. And, yeah, Don Callis, like, kind of like, you could hear him smirking. He kind of like just, you know, and he said, you're welcome. So, yeah, so I think that what this leads to is either, because I mean, and the thing is that you don't know, because Kenta just attacked Moxley and he has bad blood with Moxley, so it doesn't necessarily mean that he came out to save Kenny Omega. And, you know, because I mean, originally I was thinking that, you know, so I mean, it might end up, it's hard to put in because there's so many moving parts because you got Impact involved. But, like, you don't really need to see the stuff that's going on in Impact. You know, the people who just watch AEW, they're not going to know what Kenny Omega was doing with Rich Swann. They alluded to something going on, but you don't need to have watched it. That was, you know, additional, you know, like, you know, additional content, shoulder content, yeah. Ancillary was actually the word I was looking for. But yeah, so Moxley can go off and deal with Kenta for the title over on Strong because they announced that match for New Japan beginning, New Beginning in USA. They announced that match, so that match is going to be happening there. I don't know if they'll end up televising it maybe in AEW. But, you know, if you have Kenta available, he can be, like, the quote-unquote ambassador from the Bullet Club in Japan, either, you know, for or against Kenny's group. So, yeah, I mean, it's still, like, early to tell, but, whether it's a Bullet Club reunion or if it's, like, a Bullet Club Civil War. But, I mean, just the fact that Kenta is showing up, because Kenta is under contract from New Japan, that's the biggest deal of all of them. Because even if we had seen Moxley, Kenny Omega, the Good Brothers, or the Young Bucks wrestle for New Japan, they have that in their contracts. They're allowed to work there. So that wouldn't have been a big surprise. But the fact that you do have Kenta, who's a contracted New Japan wrestler, showing up, that means that that is, you know, an official crossover. So yeah, I mean, we're going to see.
Go ahead, Javier. Keep going.
Yeah. So, you know, so that's yeah. So I mean, it's early to tell, but you know, and how much they're going to, how much of a big part of the story it's going to be. But I mean, it was a major event. It was, and they treated it like, you know, Holy crap. And for the people, you know, and I know some of the pushback is going to be, well, you know, hardcore fans are into it because, you know, you're dealing with their history that not many people are going to be aware of, because you would need to have been following New Japan. You would needed to have been following ROH because some of those crossover stories were done between ROH and New Japan. But if you listen to the fans and, you know, chanting holy bleep, you know, if you're watching TV, you know it's something important, that something that just happened is something more. Now, it is on the commentary team and what you do next week to explain the reason why it's important. That's on them to you know, to explain the history between, you know, the everything that's going on. And like Craig had mentioned, you know, if you really want to get into it, then you could start researching and, you know, looking, you know,
yeah,
you know, getting more into the product.
It's all in, it's in the follow-up at this point, because I think they made it a big splash. I think they did that part right, and I thought the commentary team sold it well tonight. But just like most things in wrestling, like it's in the follow, and I think you got to tell a good story. And I mean, there's some some stuff happening on AEW social media right now that I can't quite follow while we're on the air doing the show. But I think will lend a clue as to where specifically they're going next. But I think you hit the nail on the head. I mean, this is big news, period. Like, it's big news to have that crossover and have it be that guy and the way that it happened. And so I think that was, really well articulated. Javier, what did you think of the wedding?
Well, I think that Miro is really, really, really dumb because Orange Cassidy coming out of the cake was the exact same thing Miro did during the Lana and Lashley wedding.
Yes.
He was wearing the same outfit, too.
Oh, my God.
So I'm thinking, and it's funny because he kind of alluded to that. I've been part of weddings, and I know how this goes, and that's when he attacked the box, and I'm like, but dude, you came out of the cake. You didn't check the cake? So, yeah.
Yeah, right.
So, yeah, I mean, I enjoyed it well enough. I know it's going to end up being divisive because if you like your WWE sports entertainment, it was a fine enough version of that. I'm fine with it in the show. I just don't like it when it's like my entire show. In terms of Miro, this is obviously what he wants to do. This is this is where he wants to be slotted. I don't think they're putting a gun to his head and having him do these skits like they would do in the WWE. It's a lower card feud and it's entertaining for what it is. So I don't put too much, ire onto it because if you're not into it, then, you got like 100 other storylines going on that will scratch your itch.
Sure. Yeah. Fair enough. Anything else for us tonight, Javier?
Well, something you brought up because you mentioned, the whole, this guy, Kenny Omega being referred to as a wrestling god. Impact, they also on the pay-per-view, Matt Stryker went pretty in-depth, it's Matt Stryker, so maybe, he sometimes like, I'm proving how smart I am kind of thing. And he went in-depth about the history between Kota Ibushi and Kenny Omega. So, that was one of the things that, he posited, how awesome would it be if we have a pay-per-view that crosses all over, crosses all three brands. And he was talking about Kenny Omega having a history with Kota Ibushi and stuff like that. So, that might be more like further down, seeding something for further down the line because, an AEW champion versus, Kota Ibushi as the dual champion or whatever they renamed the belts after he unifies them. So that looks like it's the story they're doing in New Japan. I think that's a possibility for down the line, for way down the line. Just being able to see the transfer of like talent is just something that's super exciting for me. Cause I mean, that's kind of like, it keeps people fresh, cause I mean, a perfect example, like you were mentioning about, Moxley, the Moxley Kenny Omega thing. Now there's a reason why Kenny Omega is not going after the belt because now he has to deal with the reason Moxley is not going after the belt is because he has to deal now with Kenta. And that's a big enough story to draw his attention away from Kenny Omega. So I'm expecting not to see much of that until, it's ready for him to move on. Even if it takes him off of TV for a little bit, Aston makes the ground, you're not overexposing Moxley. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, in theory, I think it's great. And I think in practice so far, they've done a nice job of kind of tying this together and kind of building this web. You got to keep that up, like keep up the organization of it and just keep up the web and make sure that it's all logical. And for the most part, I think they've succeeded. And so I think they deserve that. That praise, and they deserve let's see how this goes without putting any sort of criticism on them because I think they've done a really nice job with what they've been doing to this point. Anything else, Javier?
One quick detail that I really liked was for the Battle Royal. If FTR is not going to win it, you protect them by getting them out of the match by suspending them for their actions of the previous week. That, you know, so instead of having them in a match that, you know, to keep them strong, you don't have them in a match that, you know, you would think that they'd be one of the favorites to win. So, you know, I thought that was a good, you know, a good decision. And then you know, and their spot comes some, you know, another team that, you know, so I thought that was a really well executed thing.
Yeah. I do too. I think, you know, they've got an effective thing going with, you know, with Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus now anyway, that doesn't kind of need them to be in the title picture. So I think this is a good way to diversify that division and have, you know, both FTR and the Young Bucks doing separate things, but things that are still both really, really good. Tyler, what do you make of that?
Yeah, I agree. As well, and you know, to bring it way back to the point of the Young Bucks and you know, them not being booked effectively, you know, I think just look to FTR and whoever's booking them. I mean, I'm sure they have a lot of input in their own character and their own work and everything, but there's proof that you can book a pretty solid tag team division outside of the Bucks, and maybe they need to focus on you know, some other opinions or lean on someone else, whoever's helping with that story, because yeah, really good. FTR all the way around the last couple of weeks have been really tight. And, you know, I think that they as an actor kind of coming back into their own as a elite tag team.
And they're really helping make Jungle Boy in particular, mm-hmm. you know, I thought mm-hmm. him coming out at the top of the show, you know, look, that's a prominent spot. Not everybody got entrances and they did. And so I think that's been a real effective pairing and really fun to watch also.
Mm-hmm.
Javier, thank you.
Well, not everybody also had Tony Khan buy them a song.
That is true. Yes.
If you ever had
stuck in my head for the next 3 days as well.
Yeah, no. All right. Just a quick plug is we're going to be recording the New Japan Pride podcast tomorrow, and hopefully I'll be able to get it edited and we get it posted tomorrow. So. You know, we're going to be talking about a lot of this stuff. So if you're VIP, check that out. If you're not VIP, go VIP and check it out. Cause we're going to be talking about, the recent show and, the recent New Beginning in Nagoya. And we're going to be, talking about, you know, the whole Moxley, you know, Moxley attacking Kenta now attacking Moxley and all the stuff that's going on. So.
Yes. PWTorch.com/GoVIP, PWTorch.com/GoVIP. It's a great show. It's a great show. A must listen for your New Japan fix. So yeah, go VIP and check that out. Javier, thanks for calling as always. Appreciate it, man.
Have a good night.
Yeah. And just to, kind of recap what I've been saying, I think what I can gather from this video posted on the AEW Twitter feed is it looks like Kenny Omega issued a challenge, Omega and Kenta versus Archer and Moxley. I can't tell when he made the challenge for, but it looks like that's the potential match that's on the table. Tyler, hearing that and it being 75% what I can gather, what do you make of that?
Yeah, that is something. Especially to be next week, right? I'm looking at it too. So that's what Sean has, our fellow Torch member. So yeah, that's quite the way to go. I don't know if NXT, obviously not keeping up on that. Maybe they added something next week too, and they felt they needed to compete with that to keep the momentum going. But yeah, I mean, that is must watch television next week. So I think that's what we all want in our AEW right now. So yeah.
Yeah, it is. I think so too, and I think it'll be telling too to see kind of, you know, like it'll be fun to watch first and foremost. Like obviously, mm-hmm. I think that match is going to be a good one. Seeing, you know, Kenta there, New Japan crossover, that's big. I think like the ratings coming out of that will be interesting too. You know, to see just how much like that crossover matters or doesn't matter. You know. And I think you know, it's on AEW now to kind of build that up and tell, you know, tell their audience, you know, who this guy is and why he's important. And same goes for Moxley on a promo or something like that. I think, yeah, like that part matters. And I think there'll be some concrete numbers behind what kind of interest a crossover can drive. And I think that will be fascinating to see.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Okay, we will finish up the caller portion of the show with 860-860. Thank you for your patience, and please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, sure. Good evening, guys. It's Jay in Hartford.
Hey, Jay. Thanks for waiting. I really appreciate it. What did you think of Dynamite tonight?
So it was a middle-of-the-road show for me. Had some highs, but had some lows. And a lot of, you know, you guys have pretty much touched on it all. I just wanted to throw a few points out, and I kind of had a question I wanted you to maybe dive into a little bit deeper on. Sting, for one, I think he's, I guess, overexposed, for lack of a better term. Like, one thing I noticed that WWE does with their legends over the last few years is whether it's Goldberg or, like, Batista or whoever, they'll have them come out on Raw or, you know, SmackDown, whatever, Raw, let's be honest, right, usually Raw. They'll have them come out on Raw, and then they'll spend a week or 2 weeks or whatever with video packages, and then they'll have the person appear again on the go-home show, you know, or maybe a second appearance and then a final appearance on the go-home show, whereas with Sting, it's been every week, you know, and nothing really substantial happening other than his music hits. He comes out to, you know, save Darby from a beatdown or something. It's just been too much. And so whereas when he first appeared, it's like, whoa, Sting's back. Okay. You know, this can be fun. I mean, I wasn't clamoring for a Sting return, but you're thinking, okay, you know, this will be exciting. And then you see him all the time and he's just another guy. So, but the wedding, if I could really get to the wedding for a minute.
Yes, please do.
I wasn't even going to talk about the wedding until the caller called in earlier. It may have been Craig or someone, Craig from Toledo. I think he was so excited about it. I'm like, man, I got to talk about this wedding too, because it wasn't great. It had its moments. I laughed, but James Mitchell, first of all, you know, I enjoyed seeing him. It took me back to kind of like my early days of watching TNA when he was with Abyss and everything. He didn't do anything for me, like, in this wedding. And I think when you look at WWE, sometimes what makes their weddings more entertaining is when they get, like, just some unknown, you know, actor or person to play the priest, because it's, you know, it's like, okay, we're trying to take serious this, like, sham, this farce, something that's totally, like, not real. And that just kind of adds to the entertainment, as opposed to just going to get a random wrestling character who, you know, isn't really, the word I'm looking for, certified or something, pre-sort. It just, I don't know. He just didn't add anything to the segment. And I'm by no means a comedian or a writer of any type of media content, but I noticed Kip Sabian had the toothpick, which was funny, and Penelope Ford standing there like chewing the gum. And I'm like, okay, that she looks all nonchalant with the gum. So when Kip Sabian took the toothpick out before he like said his vows, I'm thinking, okay, she's going to take her gum out, and she didn't. So I thought it was a missed like comedic moment there. But the final thing about the wedding is just that the box, the present, just, it just ruined the whole thing for me, because at the very least the box could have like had something in it as opposed to being empty. And then that way it'd be like, oh, you got me. There wasn't a, you know, a person in the box to attack me. It was a real present. The box being empty just made the whole thing kind of dumb.
Tyler, correct me if I'm wrong on this, but did the box had the handcuffs, right?
Yeah, I knew Craig had said that earlier. You know, I'm going to go with him since he enjoyed the segment. It was, you know, probably more into it than, you know, I was typing a report, and, you know, not to give a pop out there. But, yeah, I'm not sure. So I'm going to go with Craig and say it was, but I don't know for 100%.
Okay. Well, you know what? Okay. Either way, I think it's a good point where it's like, if you're debating it and you're trying to figure out, okay, was it in there or was it not? I mean, then I think you did yourself a disservice by not making sure that that was crystal clear. But I think Craig might be right about that. That was what was in the box. I think. Well, we'll have to go back and watch it. But sitting here an hour and 28 minutes after the show ended, I think that's what we were going. I think that's what they were going for. But again, you know, I got to rewatch that too. And I guess I'll put myself through that again.
Gosh, I know, right? Now that you guys say it, I remember when I saw Rusev shackled, I'm thinking, oh, that was, you know, but still, I mean, the camera didn't catch it, you know, which reminds me, and I wasn't going to touch on this, but I thought there were a few things tonight that the camera didn't catch. And like the announcers were talking about them, like whether in the Battle Royal, I think Isaiah Cassidy, I believe one of the gentlemen from Private Party, he does like this dive and the camera like missed it. You know, like there were just a few things that the camera didn't catch tonight. So they still got to work on that. But the final thing, and I'll let you guys go because it's late. The commentary for Dynamite, right? Like, I personally have been kind of high on Dynamite, maybe because it's just fresh having a WWE alternative. And JR, he's, you know, I'm with many others who think, you know, he's the best. But he's a little too laid back for me nowadays. And it comes across like he has his moments where there's some excitement during the matches, but a lot of the times he sounds kind of like how I sound right now. Like, I don't know what I want to say next. He's like, he does a lot of and it's like, you know, if you've ever listened to Bruce Pritchard's podcast, Something to Wrestle, or JR's podcast, actually, with Conrad Thompson, they played a segment. They used to have it as an ad where JR's telling the story of how when the WWE first moved to Fox or whatever, well, not Fox, he was gone by then, but some network change. And Vince McMahon was in his ear saying, you know, fire him up, JR. Tell the people who we are, blah, blah, blah. And I'm thinking, like, as I was listening to him tonight, I'm like, he needs McMahon in his ear right now saying, fire the people up, because he was, like, putting me to sleep. And you know, he was like, yeah, okay, so let's see what we have next here. And he does that kind of a lot. Appreciate that, okay, no one's in their ear constantly and these guys get to be themselves. But JR just comes across to me as too relaxed, whereas he needs a bit more excitement and passion in his voice, as though he's really trying to sell the product and he's not just sitting there having a conversation on his podcast or talking to his buddies. So I don't know if that sticks out to you guys or if that's just me.
Yeah, I don't know that it totally sticks out to me. I think there's other parts of his commentary that stick out more, you know, in terms of what he's saying. I don't know that... you know, when he was, you know, in WWE and on Raw, like, he was the guy. Like, he was, you know, the lead broadcaster on that show. And so I think it was his job to do a lot of things, one of which was obviously tell the story in the ring and tell, you know, talk about what's going on and promote, you know, whatever merch they had or your tickets and what have you, but also to sell the product on the air. Like, I think you're wearing a lot of hats in that chair, in WWE in particular. Here, I think he gets to play a little bit of a different role, or at least in my eyes, he does. Like, I don't know that he's there to be like that guy at this point. I think you've got, you know, Tony Schiavone there. I think he brings a lot of energy in particular. And I think that the three-man booth kind of covers all of that ground, you know, holistically. And so I don't know that I look to JR to kind of, you know, excite me about the product. I'm more for him just, you know, talking about the matches, talking about the stories, being the voice of reason, you know, on commentary as they work through the narrative. So, you know, I think if your expectation is, hey, I need the commentary team and JR in particular to really sell me on AEW and sell me on these matches in a way that gets me hyped, I think you could easily make that conclusion of, hey, he needs to bring in a little bit more. I just, that's not my expectation from him, so I don't have that same issue. Tyler, how about you?
Yeah, first of all, I want to backtrack just a little bit to the handcuff thing. We were talking about missed comedy on that spot. I think they did have a missed opportunity of having somebody try to unlock Miro for way too long, you know, maybe more than 10 seconds. And not bring it up, but I would have popped for that. So that came to mind, man, when we were talking about that. So missed opportunity there.
That's well played. Well played, Tyler. Line of the night.
Yeah. When, you know, with commentary, you know, I would say I'm a poor person to ask this, because I tend to kind of align with how JR is feeling about a match. I mean, he's definitely up and down. Like, when a match is not very good, he is a little, you know, just you know, he's not interested, and I'm kind of the same way. You know, for example, tonight, I don't know, like the Kingston Archer match, I thought was okay in the beginning. JR was definitely not super into it, and to contrast that, the main event, he was into it, especially at the end. I mean, all of them were super into it, and you know, I think that is, for me personally, I prefer a little bit more natural takes like that from my commentators as opposed to, you know, Todd Phillips on Monday hyping the Lucha House Party versus her business, and it's going to be a 2-second match.
Right.
And, you know, I see where that's going, and so it's a preference thing. I mean, I would say someone that is watching the product, you know, I would align more that JR does need to be a little bit more enthusiastic, but yeah, I mean, there's other, I don't count with Zach, there's other problems with it, but yeah, I mean, that's just kind of JR, and I think if you're going to have him in that spot, you just kind of have to build that in. I don't think he's going to change his ways at 67, 68, however old he is.
Yeah. Jay, appreciate the call and the topics. Thank you very much.
No, totally. Thank you, guys.
All right. Thank you to the callers. We'll go ahead and wrap up our caller portion of the show right there. Really great calls tonight and great contributions. Mm-hmm. Right now, Tyler and I will move to the mailbag here in a couple seconds.